and welcome back to another episode of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. It is a big, big game week here as NDSU travels down to Iowa to take on the Hawkeyes of the Big Ten. And joining me, as always, on the podcast, here's co-host Ross Uglum. Ross, how are you on this Thursday evening?
I'm doing well. I'm about T-minus 14 hours from Wheels Up to Iowa. Happy to get this out for the good folks at NDSU so they can have about 45 minutes or 50 minutes or so of content to whittle into that long drive down to Iowa City. Expect between 10 and 12 Bison fans to get to the game. There's just a couple hundred single seats, it sounds like, left before a potential sellout, which doesn't always happen at Kinnick for non-con games, especially FCS non-con games.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's dive in right away here as people are probably listening to this on that long drive down to Iowa. So two questions for you right here off the bat. Do we have any injury updates heading in as we're about less than 48 hours until game time? And for the folks that are traveling down with you tomorrow on Friday, is there any kind of a get-together going on, or what's the latest there?
Yeah, sounds like there's, with a lot of these big trips, whether it be national championship games or the FBS games, there is a pep rally that's going to go on Friday night. NDSU fans have been instructed to wear green. It's believed that Iowa's going to wear yellow because it's an early game, and so the difference, I guess, would be Bison green. I know Shields has got a display out of some of the green Bison apparel for people making the trek. Other than that, it should be a pretty normal FBS game for the Bison, with the possible exception of, you know, that 11 a.m. start is mighty early, and so the tailgating is going to have to start mighty early, and the game's going to end up starting mighty early. Ryan, you have at least a brief recruiting time with Ryan Burns this week, do you not?
I do. I finally have some things to report on the recruiting end for the Bison. We got a couple of official visits to talk about. There are three official visits scheduled now per a source in the recruiting office for North Dakota State. They would be C.J. Caldone. He is a receiver from Belleville, Illinois. He's someone that scout.com has ranked as a three-star receiver. He's the 118th ranked receiver in this recruiting class. NDSU is going to be bringing him in on October 1st. And then there's two other official visits we have to talk about, and that would be with two of the Florida Bison commits, and Holden Hotchkiss, the quarterback commit from Lakeland, and then Christian Watson from Tampa, Florida, at Plant High School down there. Both of them have scheduled their official visits for November 5th. So NDSU is still continually trying to schedule some official visits. Some names to watch there are Malik Lofton and Deion Campbell, the cornerback and running back slash wide receiver type from Hopkins, Minnesota. NDSU is really trying to probably get them on that same weekend with Caldone. So that was the latest there. And then on the basketball side of things, I know people have been asking for a Reggie Scurry update. The latest I have is I spoke with Reggie and I spoke with his JUCO coach yesterday, and the plan is for Reggie to finish out his official visits. So he's going to be taking one to Little Rock, Arkansas this weekend, and then the following weekend he's going to take one to Middle Tennessee, and then that final week of September he's going to decide where he's going to play college ball. And from talking with Reggie, NDSU still is on top, so we'll see where things are at here in a couple of weeks, Ross. But first, before we get into our Iowa preview, I have to ask you about everybody's favorite topic in Fargo, and that would be Carson Wentz. Since we've spoken last, Carson has the number one selling jersey in the National Football League. Plus, there was a reference from the president of the United States. Why don't you tell folks about that?
Yeah, no surprise on the jersey thing. He's a new up-and-coming player. The Philadelphia Eagles fan base is pretty desperate for a quarterback. They haven't had a guy they can really believe in since Donovan McNabb, and as odd as it sounds, that's kind of a long time ago now. Couple that with, you know, the sales of the Philadelphia Eagles number 11 out of the Fargo and Bismarck Shields stores. I'm sure that they are, you know, really, really helping out, and that jersey is the number one seller in the country. It is surprising. It's real impressive. But at the same time, I understand the concept behind it. I know how it happened. And Obama was just kind of going for a cheap pop there, I think. Tried to pop the crowd and succeeded. Had a speaking engagement in Philadelphia. And Joe Biden mentioned something to him about needing to get on the Wentz wagon. So he alerted the fine folks of Philadelphia that it was time to get on the Wentz wagon and that they might have a young and exciting quarterback, which anybody that went back and watched the film from that one can definitely see, no question about it.
When the Philadelphia Eagles selected Carson number 2 overall, did you ever see a scenario in the second or third week of September here that Carson Wentz would have the number 1 selling jersey in the National Football League?
No, I mean, there were rumblings and such when he was down, even backing up Brock Jensen, that he might be a potential NFL player, but not the second pick in the draft, not a week one starter. Even when he was the second pick in the draft, he wasn't supposed to be a week one starter. So what a whirlwind. But, you know, the least surprised people, I think, are those that followed Carson in college.
All right, so let's get into this Iowa preview. First, let's start with, I know you were at the press conference earlier this week for Coach Klieman. I'm curious where he put Iowa in terms of the FBS opponents that North Dakota State has faced in recent years.
Well, if you've been following Bison Athletics, you know that they're 7-4 against the FBS. A couple of P5 wins, 2 over Minnesota. They took out Iowa State. I guess Colorado State's Mountain West, so that's not technically a P5. But then both the Kansas schools, Kansas and Kansas State. So they have those upper echelon wins just as far as the FBS is as a whole. But from a P5 perspective, those weren't great teams. The best team that they probably ever beat was a 7-5 or an 8-4 Kansas State team who beat Michigan in the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl. And this Iowa team, if you ask Klieman, is a good deal better than that squad. And I'm pretty sure I agree. I was actually at the Rose Bowl last year watching Iowa play, and they got torched, but I think Christian McCaffrey is a pretty special player, and that doesn't take away with what that team did last season. They're returning a lot of guys. This is a balanced football team and a football team that mirrors a little bit of what NDSU does. Klieman sure seems to think that the Bison haven't faced a team quite this good, and I think I probably agree with him.
If you look at Iowa by the numbers, they are the 11th ranked team in the country, and as Ross alluded to, they are one of the favorites, if not the favorite right now in the Big Ten West. So it's going to be a tough task come Saturday morning, but as I said, Ross, the 11th ranked team in the country, and with the schedule they've had for the second consecutive year, you know, this may be one of their tougher games on the schedule.
Yeah, I saw some preseason stuff, you know, from Iowa blogs or even the Iowa Scout potentially affiliate talking about ranking the games on the schedule. And NDSU always came in 7th or 8th as opposed to 11th or 12th. Or maybe it's just an 11-game schedule a year. I can't remember, but you would expect the FCS game to be ranked a little lower, and this was not the case. I mean, people understand that this Bison game is tough, and they understand that Iowa's not taking them lightly. The Iowa players don't view this as a cakewalk. That's for sure. You're right, though. As far as the Big Ten schedule is concerned, they really lucked out and this could be potentially another 12-0 season or, you know, a 10-2, 11-1 type of deal. It's very, very favorable. And maybe just from a Vegas perspective, depending on what happens with the University of Minnesota, they could be Vegas favored in every game the rest of the way. They certainly are Vegas favored this week.
Yeah, so it's going to be an interesting game for the Hawkeyes on many levels. But as you said, they lost in the Rose Bowl a year ago, and on offense and defensively, they are very similar to NDSU. And do you want to explain to our listeners what I mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, you saw, and I talked to Klieman about this briefly on Monday. You just saw with this squad that you know, they're going to not be an option team. They're not going to be a spread team. They're going to play traditional football just like NDSU. They're going to run the ball. They're going to have a fullback. They're going to have one or two tight ends. And they're going to do that so that they can set up the passing game. They're not just going to whip it around 50 times and try and get the play count up. Not that that wasn't an effective strategy in trying to beat the Bison because, you know, lo and behold, Eastern Washington got pretty damn close there. But I just think that, you know, this is a squad that NDSU kind of models themselves after. Iowa recruits very regionally in the same way that, that NDSU does. And there was the late 2000s, early 2010s, there was kind of a lull there. But other than that, the Ferentz regime has been very impressive. No question about it.
My only gripe with Ferentz is the man has won 7.5 games for how long has he been there now? 15 years?
Something like that. He's got an extension too.
Well, that's the thing. In his extension, the man has won on average 7.5 games a year. And if they were to fire him, if I understand the contract language correctly, he'd have a fully guaranteed his contract. If they were to fire him after next season, would be fully guaranteed. And for a man that has won 7.5 games on average for as long as he has, that absolutely blows my mind. But let's move on to when NDSU has the football on offense. You look at what Iowa has done to their opponents so far this season. They played Miami of Ohio. They won 49-21, I believe, or 45-21, and they played Iowa State last week at home, and they absolutely dismantled the Cyclones 42-3. So when NDSU has the ball, you look at what they've done against the run, Ross. Do you think this is a game where NDSU is going to be able to establish the run?
That's the big question. They're going to get Austin Kuhnert back. They're not even sure whether he'll play center or guard. They're pretty impressed with the work that Tanner Volson has put in, but it gives them a chance to maybe give Jack Plankers a blow, maybe even give Zach Johnson a blow, though honestly against Iowa, I'm not sure how many plays you would actually want Jack Plankers to, you would actually want Zach Johnson to be seated. I think at this point, it's between him and Landon, but I would say that Zach is probably the best offensive lineman on the squad. I mean, that's going to matter, and they've run the ball against everybody. That Kansas State squad had some good players. Ryan Mueller, I remember, was excellent. Even some of those Minnesota teams had some pretty decent linebackers in the time that NDSU played against them. But no matter what, they've always been able to execute the power pole running game to some degree.
Absolutely. And so if they're not able to establish things on the ground, even though you expect them to have some success, they're going to have to throw the ball. And that means they're going to have to throw the ball at Desmond King, one of the best cornerbacks in the country and probably one of the top, if not the top, cornerback in the Big Ten. If they have to throw the ball, Ross, do you anticipate Easton Stick to just throw away from whatever side of the field Desmond King is on, or how do you think NDSU game plans to attack Desmond King?
Yeah, I think he's more than likely going to, I think he's more than likely going to just run the plays that are called. Whether those plays are called away from Desmond King or not is more up to the staff. But as we've mentioned, Easton Stick fears no throw. And maybe that ends up with, you know, Desmond King with the football, but I don't think that you're going to see at any point here, really, Easton Stick play with any kind of fear. With that said, I mean, it's just a treat for Bison fans. I think that he won the Jim Thorpe Award last year, didn't he?
I think so. I think you're right when saying that, yeah.
And there is actually, in college football history, there never has been a back-to-back Thorpe Award winner. So not that this kid is maybe necessarily historically good, but certainly capable this season of an historical achievement, and it should just be a treat to watch for Bison fans to watch. I can tell you this much just from my limited experience in covering and scouting the NFL draft. Desmond King's going to be a first-round pick. I can about promise you that. So Desmond King's going to be really important because if that front seven, and I'm guessing Iowa will drop a safety, so that front eight, if they can completely shut down Indy, so you get them behind schedule and make Easton Stick beat them, Desmond King becomes such a bigger problem.
My next question for you, Ross, is say this game is kind of an old-fashioned Big Ten type of game where it's, you know, neither team can have a lot of is having a lot of success in the offensive side of the ball. How important is it for Iowa and even for NDSU that Jackson Coons, the punter, has not been anywhere near what he needs to be?
I think that's a wildly important factor, to be honest with you. I think that, you know, Kleiman will be the first one to tell you NDSU's not as good as Iowa. Well, okay, surprise, surprise. NDSU's not one of the best 12 college football programs in the entire country. So what, you know, some teams will do then is sling the ball around the yard. What NDSU will likely do to get this thing in a, you know, where they potentially would have a chance to get the ball with 90 seconds left down six and have Easton work a miracle, is they want to junk the game. And that's fine. You know, junking the game is not a terrible strategy when you're the less talented team. But it's a problem when you don't have a punter that kicks the ball over 35 yards. I think that Jackson Coons has to unquestionably have his best game in a Bison uniform for NDSU to have a chance, unquestionably.
One of my final points here on the Iowa defense / the North Dakota State offense is Josie Jewell is a fantastic linebacker for the Hawkeyes. Again, my same question to you, even that I posed to you with Desmond King, is how do you think NDSU game plans for Josie Jewell? Is it something where you think that they kind of scheme a way towards him? Do they just attack him and say, if you're going to beat us, or how do you think that they go about going at Josie Jewell?
Yeah, it's going to be up to whoever's supposed to go and get him on the second level. Jewell, a lot like Nick DeLuca, is the heart and soul of that defense. And, you know, you're going to end up in situations where he's one-on-one as well. And if, you know, if Bruce or Lance can beat him, or if King can try and run him over, I'm not sure that's a great idea. But it's going to be one of the keys to the game, because Jewell really is, you know, an NFL caliber player, one of the guys in that front seven that is certainly going to have an impact on the outcome of the game. And a guy that I don't think, you know, NDSU's so rigid, and it's fine, they're five-time national champions, but NDSU is so rigid in their scheme and what they value, what they try to get done on game day, that I would just be surprised if they're going to completely scheme away from a linebacker, no matter how talented. Plus, it's just difficult in the A-gap power to avoid a linebacker. I mean, that's just kind of a guy you either have to block or not block.
Yeah, I hear you. My last question for you with NDSU on offense is you look at the splits that Iowa has had in the first quarter against their opponents. Iowa has outscored their opponents through two games in the first quarter by a total of 35-3. If NDSU wants to keep this game close, wants to keep this game within reach, you're going to have to think they're going to have to slow down Iowa in the first quarter, and they're going to have to at least double what their opponents have scored so far. So how important do you think even getting off on the right foot with a quick start is going to be for this Bison squad?
I think it's important. I think you saw the last time that NDSU played a P5 school from the state of Iowa that it might not necessarily be of utmost importance. I was in the stands at, wasn't working with you at all. I was in the stands at Iowa State, and a guy two rows behind me after it was 14-0 Cyclones in the first quarter started grumbling that I guess Kleiman's not bowl, huh? Everybody knows how the end of that story went. NDSU, you know, ripped off 35 unanswered points, and that game was non-competitive by the fourth quarter. The one thing I'll say about this NDSU program as a culture is that nobody ever panics. At the same time, you're right. If they get down 17 points in the first quarter, it's not good. That might sound obvious, but this is a Bison team that probably shouldn't be forced to throw on first down. They would like to stay on schedule. It's going to be potentially important to have Cam Peterson make kicks early on in the ball game if NDSU is able to move the ball a little bit. But yeah, I mean, you want a competitive game. This probably isn't going to have tremendous bearing on the end of the season for NDSU. They could lose this game 70-0 and still probably be the favorite to raise the sixth consecutive national championship banner. But so much of what this Bison football brand is about is going and beating Iowa State, going and beating Minnesota, going and beating Colorado State, the success against the FBS, and trying to prove that they do kind of belong. It's such a part of the culture that I think if they lose by 35 or 40 points, it's going to be kind of a shot in the gut to everybody.
All right, so let's flip-flop. When Iowa has the ball and North Dakota State is on defense, how do you think the Bison match schematically with the Iowa Hawkeyes?
I think that you're talking about NDSU's easiest matchup. You're begging, basically, at this point, with NDSU's struggles defensively the first two games, you're begging somebody to run 22 personnel, 21 personnel, things like that, because you've got a front seven that you trust. Left to right on the line, you trust them, and everybody trusts those three senior linebackers. I don't think anybody has a problem either, even with the two safeties. If you get into a situation where Iowa's trying to play with two receivers on the field and everybody else is either a running back, fullback, or tight end, schematically, that's the best possible thing for this NDSU defense. Granted, and then that kind of goes to our next point, it's still a Big Ten offensive line and a good one. A set of Big Ten backs and fullbacks and tight ends, guys that understand this scheme, guys that were potentially recruited by NDSU but went to Iowa. I mean, this is a higher class of recruiting to basically run NDSU system. So they'll be running familiar stuff but with potentially superior athletes. And that is going to really be the definition of the game. But if this year's Bison team, for example, I'd much rather play 11th-ranked Iowa than 24th-ranked Oregon, because I just don't want to see the spread anymore.
I can't really blame you, but Ross, do you want to give folks a little bit of a rundown of what you expect the Iowa offense to try and do against this NDSU defense, or what they've done so far this season?
They'll be very Bison about it. I mean, they're going to run the ball. They've got two talented backs behind that offensive line. I think they lost a tight end to the NFL after the Rose Bowl last year, but still have a decent group of tight ends. They are going to, especially I think Greg Menard, who's a bit undersized, they're going to run off tackle quite a bit. I don't think they really want to mess with Nate Tangway any more than anybody else does. And I think those off tackle runs, some power pull stuff, they're going to try and get into second and three. They're going to try and get into third and one. Those are the things that they're going to try to do. And then when Eric Bachmeier or hopefully for Bison fans, Robbie Grimsley gets into the box there, they're going to play action. They're going to try and go up top. And they do have some capable guys in the pass game. There's no question about it.
My next question for you, Ross, would be, I would love to hear your thoughts on C.J. Beathard, the Iowa Hawkeyes quarterback. I've watched him now since he started his junior campaign in 2015, and I think he's a heck of a quarterback, especially at the Big Ten level. What do you think about C.J. Beathard?
Yeah, I had the good fortune of seeing Iowa play live twice last year and conversing with some of their fans. And the number one thing that you get about their turnaround from those fans was the difference, and this is probably overblown, as you know, as a Gopher fan, when people don't like their quarterback, it kind of gets magnified. And Iowa fans did not like Jake Rudock. And the switch to C.J. Beathard has been almost a revelation for these Hawkeye fans. And I think, he is a NFL caliber player. I'm not certain he's a starter. I mean, I don't think he's as dynamic as like a Carson Wentz or whatever, but his ability to not make mistakes and still move the ball down the field, I think he's a mid-round guy. Potentially, mid-round guys to project to be career backups, but There's absolutely nothing wrong with being a backup NFL quarterback for 7-8 years. I think that Beathard is that good, and you know that it makes such a difference. I mean, Iowa fans will tell you it's the difference between 7-5 and 12-0.
All right, so if you look at some of the targets that C.J. Beathard's going to want to throw the ball to, you have to start and basically end with Matthew Vandenberg. If you look at the stats so far this season, he has double the amount of catches as the next receiver. So Matt's got 11 catches for 228 yards and a touchdown. He's averaging over 20 yards a catch, so obviously he's a very much in that big play threat category. How are you thinking that NDSU is going to match up with Matthew Vandenberg?
Well, I think that they're going to really have to trust their corners at this point, because I'm almost certain they are going to take away the run in any way that they can. And if that means Vandenberg is one-on-one with a corner in a single high safety as opposed to some rolled coverage over to him, I think that's what you're going to end up with. I don't think that Vandenberg gets the Cooper Kupp treatment. I don't think that North Dakota State can really even afford to give Vandenberg the Cooper Kupp treatment, just strictly from a X's and O's standpoint. I don't think it's going to work like that.
All right, my last question for you with the NDSU defense is, how do you think this NDSU defensive line is going to match up, or just the NDSU front seven can match up going against this Iowa Tech? Obviously, Iowa may be the best offense that NDSU has seen in quite some time with the quality of players that they have. Do you think that this NDSU defense can last and can hold off long enough to give their offense a shot in the end, or where are you at with that?
I think that's the great hope. I think, you know, you and I have talked on a number of occasions about this. Maybe I'm a homer. I mean, no, correct that, I am. But I really truly believe that at some point, Greg Menard, Nate Tangway, and Nick DeLuca are all three NFL caliber players, and they're all in that front seven. And if you believe that, whether you're FCS or FBS, I mean, that's a lot of talent. There are not that many FBS programs, there aren't that many Power 5 programs that have three NFL guys in their front seven. Maybe Iowa's a team that does, but I just think that if somebody really wants to go in the box and get in them basically in a 7-on-7 punching match, that Tangway, Menard, and DeLuca are just as good at throwing punches as anybody else. And if this game is close, and if NDSU has the ball in the fourth quarter with a chance to win it, I promise you it's going to be because that front seven of the Bison played their asses off.
Let's just get into some general overview thoughts here as we start to wind down here on the podcast. I know that you're going to have probably a soapbox moment here in a little bit, but this is going to be the last time any of these buys are going to play against an FBS opponent when you look at the schedule. Do you think that's going to factor into their motivation at all? And what are your thoughts on that? This is, for at least a while, the last time NDSU is going to play an FBS opponent.
It is factoring, and I had a chance to speak briefly in an interview situation with both Easton Stick and Lance Dunn. They're both sophomores. They're going to be long gone unless there's some sort of Zach Braw medical redshirt malfeasance that happens in the next couple of years. They're not going to get to play against Oregon. They're not going to get to play against Colorado. This is their one and only shot against the FBS because, you know, NDSU was off against the FBS a season ago. I just think that, you know, these are kids that grew up understanding these Bison that basically won a game against the FBS every season that they were FCS. So it is a big deal, and I'm gonna actually write a feature on that and hopefully publish that tomorrow morning, and then publish the game preview tomorrow evening in advance of an 11 a.m. kickoff. So I'm going to kind of expand on that. So I'll just, you know, have spoken briefly on it now, but it is definitely a factor for these kids, knowing that Bison before them have gotten this chance three or even four times during their career, and this is it for them.
So I'm going to give give you the floor here for the most part, and I'll set things up. So obviously, if you look at other Missouri Valley opponents last week, I was sitting in the press box before the Gopher game last week, and I turned to one of my colleagues and said, "I bet you Illinois State beats Northwestern." And he goes, "You're out of your mind. Illinois State isn't very good." And I'm like, "Have you even followed FCS football, let alone Missouri Valley football?" And at the end of the game, I looked at him, and I go, "Have you checked the Northwestern score?" And he looks at me with disbelief. So Illinois State beats Northwestern last week. Again, that shouldn't be too much of a surprise. But I know that you're a huge fan of Jim Delaney, Ross, in terms of his him in the Big Ten with FCS opponents. So I'm going to give you the floor here with Big Ten FCS. Just give everyone your exquisitive thoughts on the subject.
Yeah, I think Jim Delaney kind of personifies that we've already made it attitude of the Big Ten that sort of kind of, I think, hamstrings the Big Ten from consistently competing for national championships in football and in basketball. Ohio State, being obviously the exception, but Ohio State's actually kind of a national program. Their recruits aren't really Big Ten recruits. They're, national top 100 guys, but that's not really my point. My point is this idea that they're too good to play the FCS, and it's hurting even some of these lower-level FBS programs at the gates. I understand why you don't specifically schedule North Dakota State. It's not lost on me. They beat you 70% of the time. Why in the world would you give them $500,000 to come and put a loss on your record and move you further away from bowl eligible status? I understand that. But just the general arrogance of not wanting to play FCS games is ridiculous. The top end of the FCS, as you and I both know, is better than most of the G5 and is better than a lot of the lower level P5 schools as well. And you saw that, again, when Illinois State beat Northwestern. You saw it when Richmond absolutely... This is a Richmond team that got their ass kicked at the Fargo Dome last year. They laid waste to the University of Virginia. The same Ahmad Brooks, Chris Long University of Virginia got pounded by Richmond. And you saw it even Eastern Washington already has a Pac-12 victory this year. Not only do those MAC teams that you schedule put up less of a fight than the FCS teams, but more often than not, they bring less people at the gate. If South Dakota State or North Dakota State played at Minnesota, you could expect 15,000 Bison fans. You could probably expect 5,000, 6,000 South Dakota State fans as well. They're missing the chance to play these regional games that are like Super Bowls for these FCS teams. Yeah, there is a chance you'll lose, and that's not good for your program either. But you also have to think of the revenue side of it. And playing, Miami of Ohio or Central Michigan or Akron is just not good for anybody. And I do struggle with that, and I struggle with his policy. And it's really sad. I know that was a big part of NDSU's recruiting pitch for a long time. These kids that don't quite get the Big Ten offers, well, guys, you'll get a chance to play against the Big Ten. You'll get a chance to play against the Big 12. Not only that, but you're going to be, within 8 or so hours of Fargo, probably within 5 or so hours of your hometown. At some point, mom and dad are probably going to be able to make the game. And Kleiman made mention of that on Monday, how important this is going to be for these families and these kids that they've recruited from the cities, that they've recruited from Omaha, that they recruited from Iowa and South Dakota to go to Kinnick Stadium and watch their sons play. And that's less of a fiscal discussion and just more of a recruiting discussion and kind of how cool it is to be a Bison. And that's going to go away until Oregon. And even then, it's not going to really help anything for some of the lower income families that have Bison on the team, because not everybody can just get up and go to Eugene. That's not a regional FBS game. So, I would just love to get into some sort of a rotation where they play the two Iowa schools, the two Kansas schools, Minnesota and Nebraska, and just kind of rotate through that every 6 years. These kids get to play, but with Jim Delaney acting the way that he does, and quite frankly with Kansas University and Iowa State, right now being two programs that would legitimately be underdogs to the Bison probably for the next 2 or 3 years, it's a problem. So I'll get down now, but that was a microcosm of my thoughts about Jim Delaney and the way that he handles the Big Ten.
As Ross hands me the megaphone here and steps off his soapbox, we're going to wrap things up here. And with a couple of final talking points, Ross, it's prediction time. Do you think NDSU really has a chance here? I know that you told me about the line that you've seen on this game, which is just absurd. And when you look at I understand that Iowa went to the Rose Bowl last year, but I also understand that they didn't play anyone in terms of getting there. When a 6-win Minnesota team is probably one of your toughest 3 opponents that year, I don't know that you necessarily deserve to be in the Rose Bowl, but that's not here nor there. So what do you think is realistic expectations for this game Saturday morning? And I know that you're a huge fan of this line, so if there's anybody out there near Vegas or online, why don't you give your thoughts there as well?
Well, I mean, here's what I'll say. NDSU fans are pessimistic about this game because the first two games went to overtime. They're pessimistic because traditionally these early season games are blowouts. Well, you schedule 2 top 8 teams. I'm sorry. The defense isn't quite where they thought it would be. Guess what? The defense isn't quite where you thought it would be last year when you gave up 38 points and lost to Montana in Montana. I think at this point in time, NDSU fans are a little bit too pessimistic on the game. I'm not convinced, though, that they have an actual chance to win the game. Spoiler alert, I'm not going to pick them to win, but it's the Bison. Never underestimate the mighty Bison, and they have a chance to win. It's not a good one, but I'm going to be so surprised if they are blown out. Here's a little tip for you. The last 4 FCS games for Iowa. Iowa by 11. Iowa by 14 over the worst team in the Missouri Valley, and that's Missouri State. Iowa by 8, and then last year they beat Illinois State by 17. So you're going to tell me then that North Dakota freaking State, the 5-time defending FCS champions, 7-4 against the FBS, are going to lose by more than 17 to a program that barely puts away FCS teams as it is, and have played FCS programs that are not only just inferior to North Dakota State, but like vastly inferior to North Dakota State. I have a hard time swallowing that pill. I really do. I think seeing the line up to 19.5 in places, it's kind of settled around 17.5. For those of you that are in a place where it is legal to wager, I would suggest pounding that Bison line. I think at this point, I'm almost certain NDSU is 11-0 against the spread against FBS teams. I would definitely take the Bison and the points. My actual prediction is a heartbreaker. I think that NDSU really cranks this one all the way down. Iowa does the same thing, and it ends up 17-14 Hawkeyes.
You know what the over-under on this game is?
I do not.
I think it's in the 40s. So if you want to take, as Ross is predicting, only 31 points in the game.
I do know. 49.5, which is too many points.
Yeah, I was about to. I saw that line. I was like 49.5. That's for two defenses and offenses that match up well. I was a little surprised to see that as well. So, well, there you have it, folks. There's Ross's official game prediction that is subject to change before kickoff, I'm sure, depending on if he's had a couple 1, 2, 3. But that's going to wrap things up here for us on the preview podcast as North Dakota State travels down to Iowa City to go take on the Iowa Hawkeyes of the Big Ten. So with that, we're going to wrap things up, and we thank you guys for listening. As always, if you can help us out, rate and review the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever kind of podcasting form you found us on. If you want to check out Ross's phenomenal work that he does covering this Bison football program, check it out on the BisonReport.com as well. So for Ross, for myself, we thank you guys for listening, and go Bison.